it's often two. To each his own chord to choose. There is no start, there is no end. Behind my nights, your days begin. There was time before, there'll be time again. Here's your kiss to remind you when we were wasted, we were breezing. We shot the moon right out of the sky. Half crazy, thoughts hazy. Here's your kiss to remind you when every day, page by page, words appear on the two slowly fade.
That was Page by Page by Zachary Kale, as Zachary joins me tonight on Dangerfield. If you like the music that you just heard, you can find him at zacharykale.com. That's Kale with a C, or at zacharykale.bandcamp.com, or on Instagram at instagram.com/zacharykale. So the song that we just heard, April 14th, you premiered the video for that song on Brooklyn Vegan. It's a really awesome video. Like, I've sent it to a bunch of folks already, and it's kind of one of the coolest videos I've seen in a while. It was made with a gentleman. His name's, I think, Matthew Plasek, who has quite the repertoire behind him. Sounds like he's, you know, exhibited at the MoMA, collaborated with such people as like Yoko Ono. Like, tell me a little bit about how you hooked up with him and how this the whole video came to be.
Yeah, it was kind of art world stuff, like New York art world. Like, my day job, I work for an artist, and my friend Ryan Johnson is a sculptor, and here in New York, and he's the one that introduced me to Matthew. And Matthew's, you know, he's a professional photographer. He does a lot of portrait photography for different artists and like musicians and maybe actors. I think he's photographed a lot of people, yeah. but he's also done a lot of like art photography, like, you know, for like catalogs and things like that. So that's kind of how I met him, through my friend Ryan, who's a sculptor. And Ryan is the one that made the car in the video. Cause we kind of made it together, but it was all Ryan's idea anyway, to make this kind of prop car. And if you look at Ryan, his last name is Johnson, Ryan Johnson, you can see a little bit of the similarity between his own sculpture and this car a little bit,
right?
And so like we kind of made that together. I mean, it was his idea, but we spent a lot of hours putting that car together. And then Matthew was, you know, the guy that with the camera that's just, you know, has the eye,
yeah,
for doing this stuff. Cause I've never really done a music. I mean, we've done one or two music videos,
right,
but nothing on this level.
And is Matthew the person that did your album cover as well?
He shot the album cover. Yeah.
Oh, cool. And where did you film that or shoot that?
That was actually in Jersey, which is, you wouldn't think, right. It's kind of got this, like, I don't know, like this kind of crabgrass kind of looking and like kind of marshland kind of,
yeah,
like but it looks like it could be like in Florida or something, but
totally.
Yeah, it's in the Pine Barrens in Jersey.
Yeah, and the album itself, you're kind of talking a lot about, a lot of the narrative seems to be kind of about being on the road, and it's kind of this like dreamlike state in the video. So I encourage people to check it out. They can find it on your website at zacharykale.com. And so why don't we actually play another song off the album? Let's play a song called Come On Easy, and then we'll come back and we'll chat.
Never gonna get out of this town.
That was Come On Easy by Zachary Kale, who joins me tonight on Dangerfield on Indie 101.5. You've got a show coming up. Is that correct, Zachary? You're playing...
We're finally doing the record release show. Mm-hmm. It's coming a little later than the album. It's just everything's been a little tough with just organizing like dates and things. I mean, the album, you know, obviously had been set for a long time, but just with like kind of like getting in the waning days of the pandemic and thing is kind of starting up, it's been really hard to navigate like how to, like, once things start feeling like, okay, we can do this, then it's just like everybody wants to do it at the same time, so right. It's just like every band's out there, so it's just like, I don't know, it's just, it's kind of crazy. And So, I mean, this is like the soonest date I could get it, and it's fine, you know. I mean, people have had a few weeks to check out the album, so it's cool. And
And will this be the first time that your full bands played together since the pandemic started?
no, I mean, we've done like one or two things prior to this, but this is the first time we're playing a lot of this music. Because I mean, I put out a record like right during the pandemic, like right when the pandemic started, called Fall Spring. And I didn't really get to play that stuff because that was when everything shut down. So, but that was kind of the group I had was at that time was like that knew that material. And then so when we reconvened, when it was safe to do so, we kind of did a few shows. I did one or two like last year, like when it felt good, like between the Delta and Omicron like surges. There's like this one spot where I was like, okay, like we could do a show. It was last fall, so we did that, and then we changed direction, and okay, this is other album's coming out, let's learn some of these songs. And because like a lot of the band's kind of playing with me right now is not exactly the same people that I'm playing with right now, so it's kind of like this constant thing of like adjusting who's in the band and stuff. And I mean, there's some people that are the same, but not everything. But
Yeah, and so you recorded this album, the majority of it, in upstate New York at a place called Black Dirt Studios, and then you recorded maybe one or two songs in another place. Did you go up there for like a stint of time and record it, or did you do it kind of song by song, or what was that like?
yeah, I mean, we recorded that. Like usually we'd just go up for a few days, and then we'd like it'd be like a couple weeks later, then we'd go up for another few days until we figured out what the record was. I think when we were making the skywriting stuff, I had too many songs, which is usual. And then it's like you kind of go up and you record stuff, and then you keep going back up until you've recorded everything you kind of have at the time. And then you're like, oh, wait, there's like 16 songs here. Like we can only use 10. So it was kind of like, that's how I make records usually, though. It's kind of like this thing where I don't have it all planned out like ahead of time. It's more like, okay, well, here's like 20 songs I have right now that I could record. And it's like, then we kind of just see what feels good until something makes sense, like, or an album starts coming from it, you know. But there's a lot of editing and like B-sides that don't make it, you know.
And so what we mentioned your show for those that want to check it out that are New York based. It's going to be on April 28th at Union Pool. And so maybe let's play another song off that album. Let's play Miles Ahead, Miles Behind. And yeah, we'll listen to that.
Thank you.
was Miles Ahead, Miles Behind by Zachary Kale, who joins me tonight on Dangerfield on Indie 101.5. The album that was just released April 6th, it's called Skywriting. So I read that you had kind of written those songs before you wrote False Spring, but then recorded them after. Is that correct?
Actually, I mean, Skywriting was kind of like done. It was all done before False Spring, but it just didn't come out, you know, right. That's the thing. And so it was kind of like just kind of shelved. And the thing about the Skywriting thing was it was like a band record. I mean, like I said, you were asking what the band was. And when we went in at the beginning, it was like the set four people that like went in to make a record. And it was really a band kind of democratic kind of like situation where I was trying to be like less like, well, I'm the singer and I play guitar, but like, you know, I'm trying to let them like lead the way more too. And that's kind of how it started. And then the drummer moved away and just, I don't know, things kind of got just, I don't know, difficult or something. I mean, there's definitely like people moving away and then people being busy. And then I think I was starting to lose my focus on it a little bit. And then I just kind of, as like, I had to get some new people in there and then just to wrap it up. And then it just kind of, by that point, by the time it was done, it was kind of like, I don't know. I had to move on just for my own sake. I think we spent too much time on it. And when the band thing kind of like, it wasn't like with the same people anymore. I just like, I started feeling like, well, I think I just need to start fresh. Mm-hmm. This happens sometimes. And, you know, like something takes too long. It's not that the music was recorded. The recording didn't take too long. It's more just, I didn't have a label at the time and things just kind of got like, okay, I don't know what to do. So let's just move on. And so that's what the False Spring kind of ended up like happening right after it with different people. And, I just went with that because that's what was new at the time.
I've read that some of the songs on this album, they're kind of from like tour journals or experiences from the road. Do you like kind of record them to your phone or what's your process like for kind of documenting while you're moving?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say I've probably really written any songs like on tour really, but but it's more just the, what you get from that, you know, and just kind of like, I feel like when you're in the car waiting most of the day, like to play, traveling somewhere, there's a lot of daydreaming and like thinking going on.
Right.
And so I just feel like there was a good number of years there where that was my life. And then I think the Skywriting stuff, especially that band that we made the record with, those guys especially, it was, you know, it was kind of almost like to them too, like it was like, it was kind of like, it's almost kind of meta a little bit because it's kind of like I'm kind of talking, I mean, not specifically about them, but it just, or any band, but just it felt like, you know, talking about the life a little bit, you know, or I was reflecting on the life of it somehow. And which I don't think I'd really done, but that's just what I knew at the time, and I felt like it was interesting. So
let's listen to another song then off your album Skywriting. Let's listen to Bigger Picture, and then we'll come back and we'll chat.
Thank you.
Bigger Picture by Zachary Kale. Zachary joins me tonight on Dangerfield on Indie 101.5. And you can find his latest album at his website, ZacharyKale.com. Zachary, I've read before that you said kind of like you go through periods where, you know, once you're done recording, like you sometimes have like a pause, a blank slate before you write more songs. What's that kind of period like between completing something and starting something new? How does that make you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I do have this thing where it's like, I can't really like open up, like turn on the tap until like something's done sometimes, you know, where it's like, and that's why Skywriting was a little tough at the time, like, because it was finished, but then it was kind of this unresolved thing for a while. And it was actually kind of tough to like move on. It's tough to move on when you know it's not resolved. And so that in between time can be weird, because I don't really feel like I want to write anything when I know there's something like, you know, in the wings waiting. So it's kind of like, I'm kind of like that now with, you know, now Skywriting's out. You know, I'm kind of like, I'm starting to get, oh, like I'm in this zone where I have some time again. And I'm like, okay, I should, my mind's free. So I would like turn on the tap again right now. But yeah, it definitely is like, I mean, I don't know. It happens when it happens. But yeah. I mean, I do feel like there is some kind of seasonal shift or something when something's done, you know?
Yeah, and I've read that you're pretty collaborative when you bring a song to musicians. Do you find then, once you've kind of determined how the song's going to sound on the album, is that generally how it translates live, or do you kind of experiment as well when you perform live?
Yeah, it's always kind of a little bit new each time, you know? I mean, I kind of feel like I've never been able to replicate exactly what the album sound like, just because, you know, the band changes, you know, and then also like, I mean, I could be playing solo, and, you know, even like some of my recordings that are more solo-y, like, you know, I just sound different by that point. It's like, I just like, I'm an older person now. It's like, maybe I sing in a different key now, or, you know, it's just like, I don't know. I thought that all makes sense, but
Yeah.
When I'm in the studio, like with people, it's kind of, I'm not like this obsessive demo person where I like, you know, make a lot of demos and make them all like perfect. This is how it's going to go, and we know exactly what to do. Mm-hmm. When we get in there, I'm kind of more like pretty old fashioned, kind of like Neil Young or like Dylan or something. I mean, those are kind of like my heroes, and they just kind of go in a room with their friends and just be like, okay, this is how it goes. Let's record it.
And so you also co-run a Brooklyn independent record label called All Hands Electric, and it's got about 10 artists on it. Take us through kind of like how that all started
I mean, we haven't done anything in a while. It's maybe a little dormant at this point, but I mean, yeah, I mean, there was a time where we were doing that pretty consistently. And, you know, sometimes I still use it for my own work, just because, you know, sometimes you have to just get it out there and do it yourself. I mean, the Fall Spring record was that way. So, you know, All Hands Electric was really just, at the time, I think it was just a way to like start your own thing and be like, look, like, you know, if you see like a scene happening or friends making music, it's just like, well, why don't you just like, it felt like there was a community at the time when we were doing that and the different bands, and it felt really natural. And I mean, we started that around like 2007, 2008 or something, and then it kind of slowed down around 2013, I think. But and then I sometimes I'll do it still on my with my own work, but I realized I wasn't a label like CEO. I wasn't cut out to do that. I mean, I tried and it was good, and I think it's always a good idea, you know, to do that. And like bands, you know, that can get disheartened because no one wants to put out their record or something. I think it's always a good idea to like, well, might as well do it yourself. I mean, I don't know. I just think of all the kind of the more underground punk bands in the 80s and stuff. And we were inspired by that, and just kind of like, it doesn't really matter about the gratification of being on some big label or whatever. It's just like, just get it out there. You know? I was bummed to hear about Dallas Good from the Sadies. I know it's like the that's so recent. I saw them play only like it seemed like only a year or so ago, or I mean I guess it was right before COVID, but it must be hard in that scene because I feel like it was probably pretty tight scene there in the
Really.
Toronto
Yeah, one of my
zone.
good friends is in that band, and I think it was just like a total shock for everyone. And he was just such a pillar of the music community, like so talented. And like, he came from a musical family as well, so it kind of really hit a couple different generations, I think, the impact. And also given his scope of music that he played, like he played many different kind of genres, but a big loss for sure.
I was pretty devastated. I mean, I'm like, this is a lot of people are, and honestly, I didn't really, grow up listening to it, but now that I mean, I was so happy that I got to see them and going to see them. And we're talking about the Sadies, I think I probably didn't mention the name, but I kind of like I'd always heard of them, but then I just never really delved in. And then I went to a show kind of randomly, and it just blew my mind. And then I was like, why haven't I been listening to this band? And then that I was just like, I don't know, it just really bummed me out. But
Well, why don't we actually play a song off of maybe one of the albums, Now From Your Past. Let's just play a song off your album, Duskland. Let's listen to a song called Sundowner, and then we'll come back and we'll chat a little more, okay?
Some
That was Sundowner off Duskland by Zachary Kale, and Zachary joins me tonight on Dangerfield. You know what's been really interesting is, like, you know, reading up, like, I know obviously you've been listening to your music for years, and like that album and the Blue Rider one I have on vinyl, and always kind of like were the albums that I put on at my place, and people would be like, oh, who is this? This is amazing. And so I look forward to getting the vinyl of this one too. I've got the digital, but I'm going to get the vinyl also. Nice. But yeah, so when I was reading up more about you just in advance of this interview, I was just struck by like how wonderful all the reviews of you are. So like I've done this you know, the show for about 2 years, and I always do some, you know, extra research, even if I know the people before I start. And the just even how people speak about your music is, it's really cool, because everyone kind of, it's like a different way. Like it really seems to move people to write in a certain way that you don't see often, I think, in reviews. And I even looked up you've got a great German magazine that has just did a couple of pieces on you. And I did the Google Translate, and I was like, oh, even the Google Translate, like, it's just so beautiful.
I think he was cool. We did a similar thing as we're doing right now, you know? I mean, we did an interview, and yeah. I think he recorded it, and then just kind of, you know, probably wheedled it down until it was, like, something he could use. But yeah, he was really nice, and he was doing that just as kind of a labor of love too. Like, I don't think there was really any money involved. It's just like he's just a fan, so that was cool.
And so you've been over to Europe a couple times for sure, right? Like traveling.
Yeah, I mean, I used to go there quite a bit. And, you know, when I'm talking about the touring stuff, you know, and the skywriting thing, I feel like I've had my share of that stuff, but the U.S. touring has always been a bit tough. But I was doing a lot of Europe stuff in the mid 2010s, I suppose. And you know, I would go out there alone a lot,
yeah,
and travel like in a car, like literally like getting a rental car and driving around by myself. And it was cool. I mean, it was kind of lonely, but it was fun in a way. I mean, it was. And I would go on these long, like month long tours there, like play every cow town in Germany and like places. And it was cool. I mean, the thing about that is I got so much better when I would do that. It was like such good practice. It was like, wow. I think in Spain and Germany, yeah, especially, I feel like they still kind of are like, I feel like I have a lot of fans there.
Yeah. And it just seems like, like from all I've heard of folks that tour Europe, there's like just this really, there's a real investment in the arts there, and the artists are treated so wonderfully, like great dinners, great community. Like, it seems like it's just like they're countries that really like, you know, invest in the arts and appreciate them a lot. Like you can kind of, it just sounds like that. Like people get taken care of pretty well when they're there.
Yeah. I think they just treat like, they treat you like an art. I mean, like an artist. And I think in the States that it's just not really, it's just business and,
right.
You know, it's not really, I don't know. There's something about your well-being doesn't seem to be.
Yeah. And I know. And at least like in Canada, like the problem with Canada is that the distances are so long between cities. And so I find that Canadian artists, it can really break them, because, you know, in America, you can tour, right. You know, go on like a 4-week tour and hit so many cities. And in Canada, there's just these stints, like right. To get out west, there's the prairies, and it's like, you know, one town every right. Like 2 days. So it just kills people. So it can be really kind of taxing. But I guess Europe.
But I was always impressed by like the Canadian bands I've heard about that yeah. Just seem to truck along like all through there and like nowhere to go. And like even these long, but you know, they're coming to the States too. But it's just like they always seem like they have it down even more than a lot of U.S. bands from what I feel like I see sometimes, yeah. You know, especially with like the Canadian kind of more folk scene or whatever, like kind of indie. I just feel like they always kind of, maybe they have the best of both worlds, because they're going to come here. Whereas like a lot of US bands, maybe they just don't go to Canada as much.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
They'll go to Toronto, they'll go to Montreal maybe, but like, that's it. You know, it's like, they'll just hit those two places and maybe BC if they're on the West Coast. But like, I mean, those are the only three places I've ever really been. I mean, I did play in Ottawa once at like a house show the last tour, which was actually really nice. I mean, it was a fan. It was a fan who set it up,
Oh,
and
cool.
we played in their house, and they had this really nice
I think you like the
basement.
East Coast too. The East Coast has actually got a great music community. It's kind of like the Halifax, Newfoundland, like that area. It's
Right.
almost like, especially like Newfoundland, it's all, because it's kind of like the first point since Europe. There's like, they've got a real love of music and the arts over there too. So if you can ever get there, it's a really
Right.
great place. And actually, I know you're a big Dylan fan. Have you heard about that new Dylan museum in Tulsa? Have you heard about this?
Oh, right. I have heard of that. That's
Yeah.
like where the archive is, or I
Yeah.
don't, it's like just all the ephemera and
Totally.
like stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird that it's in Tulsa. It just seems like a random place. You'd think
I
it'd be
know.
in Minnesota where he's from or something,
Right.
but
I think I read
all
that it was just like someone who had a lot of money, like put up the money for it, and it's just there. Because I've looked into maybe going there, and it's like two flights. Like you can't even get there directly, I think, from
I
Toronto.
know. I mean, Tulsa's supposed to be a really cool city. I mean, it's where
Yeah.
J.J. Cale's from,
All right.
and like there, it's kind of known for its a music town, like back in the 70s anyway, and 80s, I think. I don't know what it's like now, but I know, I think, Leon Russell's label was based out of there, and it's like kind of the J.J. Cale and things like that, and came out of. But yeah, that would be cool. I would definitely go if I was coming going through there. But I mean,
Totally. So maybe I want to play one more song from you. There's a really cool thing that you did a couple years ago, and it was like a collaboration for, and you played the song Love in Vain, and it was for like a thing called the Natch series.
all right.
And tell us a little bit about that.
I mean, the song, or just, I mean, or that
Yeah,
recording,
the
the
recording.
special,
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, that song, I just kind of, it's a cover, but like, it's
Yeah.
kind of my own weird version of that song.
Yeah.
And I kind of always had it, and it was always this thing I would always pull out, like when I played solo, especially. And actually, I didn't play with a band for quite a bit. I think when I was like learning how to play solo acoustic, like, and get in the folk idiom and the blues idiom kind of thing, I was like, starting to use different tunings in the guitar and like studying these blues guys and the kind of what tunings they would use. And I think I just kind of was like, I was learning how to use the shapes and stuff. And I think I was also like getting in deeper into folk music and the kind of idea that you can adapt a song and change it. And so that was just a random thing where I don't know, I just like, I adapted that Robert Johnson song and kind of into a different melody and chord change or whatever. And I would just, it was always like a crowd pleaser. So I'd always, I played it. I still play it sometimes even, but, I should record it properly, like for a record, but I've always meant to. Yeah. People always like it, and it's super swampy and fun to play. And yeah, there's some a good recording of me playing that in Spain. Someone made a really nice video. It's a live recording of me playing, but like I don't know what they did, but they edited some kind of visuals together in it, and it's the audio of it's like captured super well. It feels like an album recording.
Cool.
But it's on there if you look it up. Zachary Cale, Love and Vain, it'll show up for sure.
Awesome. I'll look that up.
Love, love.
a train rolled to the station, and I looked her in the eye. A train rolled to the station, and I looked her in the eye. I was lonesome, I felt so lonesome, I could not help but cry. And all of my love is in vain. Love, love, in vain. Love, love.
So for those who were listening to the music we played tonight, so that was Zachary Kale, and you can find him at zacharykale.com. And actually, I'm super bummed, Zachary, because I'm actually going to be in New York City next weekend, and I'm missing your show by one night. Yeah. I'm flying in on the 29th. It was great.
I should have announced this sooner. thank you for having me.
Okay, well, you take care, Zachary, okay? Have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.